bow down. We will not bow down to genocide. There was a preacher in Harlem who had two children. Both of them died within 1 year because he couldn't get any heat in his tenement during wintertime. Reverend McPhailin's kids didn't get very old. You see, he got no heat and his kids got cold. That's the second child he's had in 1 year that died. You'll see next week, old Bob Hope was making little jokes like, drop the bomb. Why don't you clean up the Harlem slum? But we will not bow down to genocide. Can I get a little help? Can I get a witness saying?
Ooh, it is time now for the weekly broadcast of the African People's Solidarity Committee Reparations in Action show here on HooRadio.com. The International Voice of the African Revolution, and we welcome you. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be presenting some presentations from the International Conference on White Solidarity with Black Power that just took place in St. Petersburg from January 9th through the 11th. It was the annual plenary conference of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And as always, as we start off this program, we want to thank the African People's Socialist Party for giving us this time here on Uhuru Radio and for giving us the opportunity to participate in a movement, a revolutionary movement under the leadership of the African working class to change the world as we know it, to make the world into a place where all people can live with freedom and dignity and self-determination in peace and prosperity, no one people at the expense of another. And so we thank the African People's Socialist Party for allowing us to be a part of that and to have this program here on Uhuru Radio to speak to you. Last week on in St. Petersburg, the African People's Solidarity Committee held our annual plenary, and it was 3 days of phenomenal presentations, talks, discussions, strategizing about how we can carry out this work. And we're going to begin today's program of Reparations in Action here on HooRadio.com with the opening presentation, the opening remarks that were made by African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess. That's going to be for about a half an hour, and then we're going to play a second presentation by Penny Hess, which was her presentation during the Monday night workshop, which was a community forum entitled Prisons, the Drug War, and the African Resistance, Military Occupation of African Communities and the Right to Resist. So, and if you were listening earlier, you heard a presentation, an excellent presentation that was made by African Socialist International Chairman Omalia Shetela entitled A World Without Borders, in which he discussed the significance, the controversial issue of nation building by colonized people as a necessary prerequisite for successful anti-imperialist struggle. So if you didn't get to hear that on Omalia Shetela Speaks earlier today on UhuruRadio.com, I really encourage you to become a subscriber to Uhuru Radio. When you do that for a minimum of $10 a month, you gain unlimited access to downloads of speeches, both historical and current speeches, by Chairman Omalia Shetela. But that presentation came from the last week's International Conference on White Solidarity with Black Power as well. So we want to go ahead and begin here with the opening remarks by African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess.
Uhuru comrades, and I want to thank Wendy and Scott and Comrade Secretary General Allison Haney for opening up this incredible conference today. First of all, I want to welcome everybody here and to say this is incredibly moving to see you all here. I'm very humbled to be part of this conference today and to see the future of what the African People's Solidarity Committee is going to be. And I want to welcome everybody here, and I want to start with thanking Chairman Omalia Shetela and the African People's Socialist Party for giving us the opportunity to be more than just another aspiring white person who lives and dies by your bank account, your mortgage, your job, your vacations, going to the mall, or anything else like that, that allowed us to separate ourselves from the history that we're born into, from the reality, from the relationship with the U.S. government, with parasitic capitalism, with our relationship on the backs of African people and oppressed and colonized peoples around the world, to begin to understand a real way, a concrete way, that we could jump off that pedestal and join the rest of the people on the planet Earth. And that is the most incredible experience, to be able to be part of this. It is a journey that has not only made us realize that we're part of changing the world, but given the most profound meaning and definition to our own lives. And this is the message that we have to take to other white people by the millions, as we see imperialism in this incredible crisis all around us falling down. But it's not going to go away by itself. Imperialism has to be struggled, brought down, kicked to death, beaten to death, and it's going to do that through the leadership of African workers and colonized peoples around the world. And our stance inside the belly of the beast is key and extremely important in this whole struggle, and we have a key role to play, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I want to join Secretary General Allison in welcoming the new comrades who have just joined APSC, Wendy, Craig, and Scott Millender and Pete. And I know there's going to be others constantly throughout the next few weeks and months that APSC is going to be expanding. And to say that it's an honor to have all of you in the ranks of APSC, and I'm very impressed in the seriousness of your work, the professionalism, the way you approach things. I love the way that the new people are coming in and testing out the line, struggling out there, whether it's on the Uhuru News site or out there in the world, struggling around winning other white people, defeating opportunism and other kinds of lines, and just making a presence in the world. It's very, very powerful to see. I see all the comrades from Miami and Jesse and just so many people coming forward, Rebecca, and it's fantastic. Kristen, all the work that people are doing, sometimes in really isolated situations like Diane, yet taking on the University of Florida, out there struggling. It is really, really humbling and very, very inspiring to see. So I want to welcome everybody there. And I also want to do something that we don't do very much, and that is to just say the incredible respect and love that I have and we have for the comrades of APSC who have really been in the struggle for many, many, many years, who have done things that they never thought they could do, that were not people that got an MPA in business or knew how to run an institution or knew anything about organizing or anything like that, but out of a deep commitment to African internationalism, to overturning parasitic capitalism and rectifying our relationship, and a deep belief and internalization of reparations and the struggle for, we call it material solidarity, returning the stolen resources of African people to the African Revolution. Comrades have taken on incredible, incredible projects and institutions and built them and just done things that we never knew that we could do. And it's because of the revolution. It's because of the leadership of the chairman, O'Malley, and the African People's Socialist Party, and to see the struggles, the revolutionary struggles of the people of Vietnam, who were in a state of near starvation when they took up their revolutionary struggle against the French and the U.S. and kick their asses. It is seeing the history of the people of Nicaragua and Angola and Kenya and all over the world struggling for the liberation, struggling to get this vicious U.S. imperialism off their backs, that have given us the just the inspiration to take this up day by day and to take on this this struggle, the work that the task that we have before us. We have to solve problems every single day, and we come to this work with our contradictions. With we're white people. And the party has, I'll talk about it more a little bit later this afternoon, that it's been an ongoing process of struggle, of constant taking on, molding us, showing us the way to become revolutionaries, to become part of humanity, to become worthy of that name. But I want to thank and just recognize my comrades, Kitty, who's done an incredible job on the economic front and has been for years, Maureen, Janice, Comrade Janice, Allie up in Philly, has been there 20-something years, 21 years, I think, just really creating an important base in Philadelphia, etched it out, the meaning of solidarity, and Janine and Joel, Comrade Joel, out in Oakland, opening up the furniture store every day, taking it on, making it into a very dynamic institution. Wendy, Stephanie, Lisa Watson, Lisa Burgess, who just jumped into the furniture store and in Philadelphia and has made it an incredible success. And Comrades Sandy and Harris and Ruby and so many others who have been so important in building the African People's Solidarity Committee. Just amazing comrades. I am so proud to be among your midst, and we just want to thank you, comrades, for the inspiration that you give to me and the example that you set every day, comrades. It's an inspiration. Uhuru. <laughs> 2010 was an incredible year for the African People's Socialist Party. I think it was a key turning point that we're going to continue to see the reverberations from over and over again and throughout the next several years. We saw 2010, one of the things that happened early in last year was the recognition of the chairman by University of South Florida, who built a special collection of the chairman's works, the largest such collection in the entire world, and there was a tremendous event at USF sponsored by the Nelson Pointer Library there that honored the chairman, that did a kind of interview with him, sort of inside the actor studio style, that was very powerful and reached so many people that wouldn't necessarily come to the Uhuru House or another kind of event. And I think we can't underestimate the significance of that event. It was a great start to 2010. We also saw the continuing development of the Office of the Chairman. That work, led by Deputy Chair Ona Zanaya Shatella, is just transforming the movement as a whole and building and institutionalizing the offices of the National Central Committee of the party all the way throughout. We see the development of that, and that has tremendously set the tone for the kind of work that we're all doing inside of the African People's Solidarity Committee and the African People's Socialist Party right now. It provides leadership for how the office of the chair of APSC is going to be developed, and it shows us that how casual we've been, how without institutions, so that if one of us is not here anymore, then how would, you know, our offices are not institutionalized. This work has not been developed that could be turned over from generation to generation. And it's this kind of work that shows the seriousness, the depth, and the longevity of the African People's Socialist Party and the APSC. The party's Congress was an incredible success. I think most people in this room, or a lot of people in this room, were there. It was a real turning point, and I think one of the most significant things about the Congress is the way that it allowed the party to emerge as the leader of the African Revolution inside the U.S. and around the world, and also the leader of the anti-imperialist movement in the U.S. and around the world. And I think there was tremendous acknowledgement by all different sectors of the African liberation movement of the party and of the party's leadership. The chairman produced his political report, which was published into a book, One People, One Party, One Destiny, which has to be the Bible for this period. It tells us everything that we need to understand theoretically and also organizationally, strategically, how the party is taking on all the different fronts, the significance of NPDEM, the significance of Black is Back Coalition, the significance of APSC, and what our task is, as the chairman says, to become reverse missionaries on the side of African revolution. And this is our challenge, to rise up to this new period, to build in ways that we never have before, to go to lengths that we've never had before, to build our institutions in a new way, to take Uhuru Foods that we have 30 years of experience and a tremendous base in the Bay Area and here, and be able to transform that to a much greater institution than it needs to be, a 24/7 constantly ongoing institution, just more similar to the Uhuru Furniture Stores. And our task is to build the Uhuru Solidarity Movement as an organization that is self-sustaining. We've used the Uhuru Solidarity Movement over the years in a lot of ways as a sort of tool to do things that APSC needed to get done. So if we were in the middle of a political campaign, we had a Uhuru Solidarity Movement. But if we were in the middle of the PIE campaign, we sort of turned the Uhuru Solidarity Movement into the PIE campaign. And we're going to have a little bit more of a division of labor, because it's really important that we have a political front that can keep moving and out there, regardless of whatever else we're doing on the economic front, and who can help build that, and who can also begin to win resources and a stand of reparations from North Americans, not based on buying a pie or buying some furniture or other kinds of things that we do in a transactional way, but based on political support and unity with solidarity with this movement for the liberation of African people. And I'm very excited about doing that. We have on our slate from the National Central Committee welcoming Stephanie Midler, and the proposal is that she will be the national chair of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement beginning this year. So that is going to be very, very exciting. But we have a challenge, and our challenge involves building the infrastructure of the leadership of APSC as well, to build the office of the chair of APSC, the Office of Economic Development, the Office of the Secretary General, and all the other offices that we have in the National Central Committee. And I want to salute Scott Millender, who will be a really important part of the Office of the Chair of APSC. He will be the Chief of Staff of the Office of the Chair of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and I just want to put Scott forward for that. I'm very excited about it. And Scott brings so much in terms of how to do the work, and he knows a lot about business, and yet he's also always struggling politically and very developed in terms of the line and understandings, and just brings so much about how to win people. He's at his church, the Unitarian Church, struggling with everybody to stand in solidarity and join the solidarity movements. And it's great. I'm really, really happy to welcome Scott to that position. But we were talking the other day about this whole role, and Scott was saying something about how he was so moved by the chairman because the chairman puts forward a vision for the future. And I could say that is certainly what won me the first time that I ever heard the chairman way back in 1976, when I couldn't, you know, I mean, there's so much that went over my head that I didn't understand, but I was so impressed by the seriousness of the African People's Socialist Party, by its professionalism, by the chairman's presentation, which he stood in front of a map of Africa and went through all the countries in Africa about what was happening. And it was a time of a revolutionary struggle all over Africa. And he could put forward a vision of a world without borders, a vision of a world without oppressors and the oppressed, a world without war, a world without scarcity, a world in which all human beings could work together to have the interests of all humanity at heart. And it was something, I think all of us have felt it, that we want to be part of that. We want to be lifted out of the cynical, everyday reality of U.S. imperialism and our expectations of what we're supposed to be in that. And the thing about the chairman's theory, though, is that he is able not to just put forward in an ideal what the world can be, but to lays out a theory about how things got to be the way they are now and what it will take to transform the world and to get to that place. And so it gives us a task of what we have to do. And the chairman often talks about how the significance of the African People's Solidarity Committee is underestimated. And I think it's time that we start estimating the seriousness and significance of the African People's Solidarity Committee, because it is absolutely the most important organization that has ever been created in this realm of the relationship of white people to African people and the question of anti-imperialist stand of white people that has ever been created, and that this was the chairman's vision for many, many years to create the African People's Solidarity Committee, and it was the chairman's leadership, the chairman's belief that those of us who heard him speak and wanted to join this organization could be not just exceptions, but we're part of the broader white population, and our job is to go out into the white population and win other people just like ourselves, which we had a lot of reluctance to do once we began to understand the reality of parasitic capitalism and the history of what white people have done and do to African people and oppressed peoples around the world every day for the last 500 years. But the chairman believed and struggled, and the party struggled fiercely with us. You know, it's a very incredible experience. And I know when I joined the African People's Solidarity Committee, I had no idea that meant that we would have to build the organization. I thought I could just join the organization and come and take notes and whatever. And I had no idea, you know, and yet we have been able to build the organization and carry out things that, you know, that we had no ever even given a thought to be able to do. But the significance of the African People's Solidarity Committee is that it does exist, and it is therefore has permanently changed the relationship of North Americans to African people. It will never go back to not being that way. These ideas and this structure of an organization has been introduced into the population. It is out there. The seeds are there. And that as North Americans, as white people, as Europeans, we were able and still are able to adopt African internationalism as our worldview, as an understanding that we could make a commitment, that we could come to the same conclusions as the African People's Socialist Party about what we should be doing. And for many years, the party had to struggle with us. Well, you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that. And when we finally had the awakening, and it took about 10 years, that this is our organization, this is our politic, that we made the commitment that we never wanted the party to have to struggle with us about raising more resources, building more institutions, doing more work to win North Americans, that we wanted to have those conclusions ourselves. And this is an incredible reality, and it's, APSC is very significant. It's incredibly significant, and we have to value it and put it forward and fight for it and win other North Americans to it. It is an incredible honor to be part of it, comrades. We can see all around us, imperialism is dying. No matter what the media is trying to say, that things are getting better, the U.S. is in recovery. What? You know, there's more. The number of people on food stamps in the United States right now surpasses the population of Spain. There's, you know, the number of people unemployed is, they're talking about, well, the unemployment numbers were better in December, and of course, that's partly because people were hired for little jobs during the Christmas season, but it was mainly because millions of people stopped looking for jobs and were no longer counted in the numbers of people searching for jobs. That we're talking about the fact that imperialism is saying, well, in 2010, 937,000 jobs were created by the Obama administration. But they don't say that 8 million were lost in the crisis and the collapse of 2008, and that it takes something like 100,000 jobs every month just to stay even because of all the new people coming into the workforce. So there's no better situation in terms of employment, in terms of jobs. There's the manipulation of the statistics. But we can also see imperialism collapsing in so many other ways. We see the shootings that just happened in Arizona. It seems like it's every day that there's something like that. There's a whole section of the Google News just on what are the latest shootings and killings and people going in to some kind of workplace or some kind of situation. And that particular one in Arizona was important because it was a political act, apparently. It was somebody taking a political stand. And I also read that a policeman was killed in Baltimore yesterday, and I don't know more about that, but we see that. They said that 2010 was the highest year ever of the number of police killed in situations like that by civilians, by people resisting in some form or other. And we see, you know, imperialism's got a war that is escalating. It's got 150,000 troops in Afghanistan, which is called the graveyard of empires, and not for nothing. That is deepening that situation, not any chance of, quote, winning that war. And nothing, it's really, the U.S. did not really win in Iraq. We have the situation in Pakistan, all over the globe, whether it is people actively resisting in an armed confrontation or struggle, or whether it is former colonies like China and India and Brazil who are struggling economically to compete with imperialism, to compete with U.S. imperialism and parasitic capitalism as it exists, and to take the resources into their own people and their own, quote, development to become imperialist leaders, we see resources in a crisis because the peoples on the planet Earth, the chairman said, are resisting, are struggling against imperialism one way or another, against U.S. imperialism, and this is responsible for the economic crisis that the U.S. is facing. We see the U.S. with crazy, incredible weather, and it measures that in how much money is lost, with something like $20 billion because of the blizzard and at Christmas time, and they're measuring it in that. And we see birds falling out of the sky and fish dying, and imperialism, it's over. It is over. And any pretense that other North Americans have to keep on maintaining a life and ignore this is ridiculous. Our responsibility to wake up our relatives, our friends, other white people, to bring them over to their own future, our own future, the only thing that we're going to have to hold on to as this Titanic sinks is the struggle for African liberation that's going to defeat imperialism and bring about a world in which all human beings can finally live. And in a way, the African Revolution is evolution, because it will bring humanity to a higher level. It will set a stance for a true morality for the entire world. It's been the African Revolution and the struggles of indigenous and colonized peoples that have shown us that Columbus was the agent of genocide. That Scott was just mentioning the other day, how Columbus made his money in trafficking indigenous children in a sex trade. And among other things, he was also sold African, enslaved African people as well. And the other day, the Pope made a statement that something like, in the 1950s, pedophilia, as he said, was considered a normal part of manhood and childhood. He made this statement, and nobody, went. And he said that it wasn't a matter of absolute morality, of something being absolutely wrong or absolutely right. It was a matter of comparing it to, what was the norm of the day, which is. But what is it that has created even a sense of morality in the world, that there are things beyond which you can't do, even imperialism can't do anymore? It's been the voice of the oppressed African, the voice of the oppressed indigenous and colonized people all around the world who set the terms in their struggle for how human beings must relate to other human beings. And it's only begun because they don't have power yet. But imperialism is vicious. It is the most brutal system that has ever existed on the planet Earth, and there is no way that we as white people can ever rectify that we can't reform it. It was born parasitic. It was born sucking the blood of African people. It was born on blood and suffering and rape and child abuse and pedophilia and enslavement and working people to death and stealing their resources, humiliating them, degrading them, destroying their resources. Look what it did to the Mayan and the Aztec, who had brilliant understandings of astronomy, all of which was destroyed, except for three books, which accidentally were saved. And this system has to go. And we can find our humanity in standing in solidarity with African people, comrades. That is the only place, and we have to take this message out. And I want to say, too, that it is extremely important that the African People Solidarity Committee exists under the leadership of the African People Socialist Party. Because when left to our own devices, we will always come up in our own interests. We will always find a way to come up in our own interests at the expense of African people and everybody else. It has to be under the leadership. We have to be part of the strategy of the African revolution itself. And this gives us the ability to overturn our own material basis of opportunism, to jump off this pedestal that has given us a material life at the expense of the suffering of the vast majority of humanity, and gives us a role that we have to play, and that we can do this. We can win thousands and millions of other white people to the stand, and this is our work now. Uhuru, comrades.
That was African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess speaking at the International Conference on White Solidarity with Black Power held in St. Petersburg, Florida. That was the annual conference, annual plenary of the African People's Solidarity Committee. And you're listening to UhuruRadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. So that was a moving opening that was made by Chairwoman Penny Hess. It was a very powerful conference, and we'll be sharing more of that here with you on Uhuru News, UhuruRadio.com, as well as on the website of the African People's Solidarity Committee, which you can find by going to uhurusolidarity.org or to apscuhuru.org. And I encourage you to do that, as well as to get involved. If you are not already a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, you can join online, you can get involved in this important work, and I really encourage you to do that. I also want to let you know that the annual convention of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement will take place in Philadelphia from February 19th to the 21st, and that is open to everyone who wants to get involved or just learn about and hear more from the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. Again, that's going to be February 19th through the 20th in Philadelphia. Well, our next presentation that we want to share with you today on the program is a presentation that, again, Chairwoman Penny Hess made at a forum during the International Conference on White Solidarity with Black Power, and that was a forum that took place on Monday, January 10th in the evening. It was a community forum entitled Prisons, the Drug War, and African Resistance, Military Occupation of African Communities, and the Right to Resist. And this also is a powerful presentation. Chairwoman, African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess took the platform, was on the platform along with African Socialist International Chairman Omali Ishitela, MPDOM President Diop Olugbala, as well as Wamba Ishitela from the African Resistance Campaign. So here we hear again African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess.
And I want to welcome everybody here. It's an honor to be on this panel today and to welcome Chairman Omali Ishitela back to our conference, and Diop Olugbala, Mwamba Ishitela. So this is going to be really powerful. As Jesse said, I'm a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee. This is the organization of white people working in the white communities, when we say North American or European communities, organizing other people just like ourselves to recognize that African people are colonized inside the borders of the United States and struggling for liberation of African people as one people all around the world. We're going to talk about that a little bit more, but the focus of my presentation right now is the fact that it is pretty well acknowledged that the U.S. is waging a war against the people of Afghanistan, and in its own self-definition, that war is the counterinsurgency, a war against people who are rising up to defend their own land and their freedom and their self-determination. But what is not widely recognized, what is not talked about, and what we don't see a stand taken around in this country is that the U.S. is also waging a war against the African community. And this is what I want to show, and I want to talk about that a little bit, and we will be discussing the reality of that tonight. Uhuru, so stop the war against the African community, and we say solidarity with the right of African people to resist, to have self-determination and liberation. The understandings in this presentation are based on the theory, it's called African internationalism, the theory of seeing the world through the eyes of the African working class, and this is the understandings of the Uhuru movement, and this theory was developed by Chairman Omali Yeshitela. Under Obama, the U.S. is escalating the war in the Mideast and around the world. Obama's war budget is greater than that of any previous president, and that is really important to understand, that Obama represents the interests of white power, of imperialism. He is what the party calls neocolonialism, and we saw under Bush some sense of an anti-war movement, but yet we have Obama escalating the war in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and in other parts of the Middle East, and we see no response except for the Black is Back coalition. We see just a paltry, weak kind of response, if at all, from the people who put themselves forward as the peace movement. Obama's war budget is nearly $700 billion. There's 150,000 troops in Afghanistan, a 600% increase in operations, in military acts and campaigns going on inside of Afghanistan right now. But what is not talked about is that Obama is also intensifying the other war, the war against the African community that goes on right before our eyes every day here in St. Petersburg, in Philadelphia, and all around the world, all around the country. In Afghanistan, people are forced to live in a U.S. war zone. In the African community in the U.S., people live in a war zone. In Afghanistan, it's based on one of the most impoverished countries in the world. The people are colonized. They do not have power over their lives. They're fighting for their self-determination. Inside the U.S., African people are impoverished and colonized. One-third of all African children live in poverty. African people have 10 cents for every dollar that white people have in this country right now in 2011, and that gap is growing. In Afghanistan, it's a people under siege, military occupation. In the U.S., African community, it's a people under siege, under military occupation. We see special forces in Afghanistan. We see special forces in the U.S. African community. Every kind of SWAT team, every kind of highly militarized police force, every possible, I mean, how many different forces are implanted in the African community? DEA and SWAT and the Green Team and drug forces and every possible kind of police force that you could ever imagine. There are mercenaries in the Middle East, Blackwater, now called Z, mercenaries in the African community. And increasingly you're seeing that, where cities like Oakland, California, and of course this is New Orleans, but they're are cities all over the country that can no longer afford their police budget, so they're jobbing the police out to mercenaries in the city. We have checkpoints famous in Palestine where the people are stopped and have to go through police interrogation and all kinds of searches in Palestine. This is well known, and it happens, of course, in Iraq and other places as well. Checkpoints in the African community is called stop and frisk. In New York City alone, 600,000, mostly African and other oppressed and colonized peoples, searched and stopped by the police. There, something like 250,000 or more in Philadelphia, and this is going on all over the country. There's U.S. tanks in Afghanistan. There's U.S. tanks in the African community. This was New Orleans. That's one example, but that's not the only example where that kind of military force is called out against the African community. U.S. helicopters over Afghanistan. U.S. helicopters, for one example. Of course, they're flying over the African community all the time. If you live in or near that, you can see that. But also, this is the helicopter that dropped the firebomb on the MOVE family's house in Philadelphia that killed 11 men, women, children, and burned down 63 homes in the African community in 1985. U.S. uses drones against the people of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Miami Police Department just bought a drone, and it says there are spy drones in demand by U.S. police, increasingly being used. Military police containment is what is happening in Afghanistan and in the Middle East. Police containment against the African community, and you can just note that's a U.S. postal truck that the police are coming out of. Collective punishment in Palestine, a whole people punished for the acts of supposedly of a few singled out. Collective punishment in the U.S. against the African community, exactly the same things are happening. We see mass roundups, imprisonment in Palestine and in Afghanistan, mass roundups, imprisonment of African people in this country where 2.5 million people are in U.S. prisons, 50% at least are African. You see U.S. murder of civilians in Afghanistan all the time. That has increased incredibly under under Obama, police murder of civilians in the African community. This is the murder, the blatant murder of Oscar Grant in Oakland, California on January 1st, 2009. And the only reason that was distinguished from any other police murder that goes on almost constantly in every city around the country is that people, it was on the BART station and the trains were in and people had their cell phones and they were videoing it and taking pictures of it. So they couldn't make up a story about what they said happened. People had the truth that this young man was shot point blank in the back by the police. We see torture. Abu Ghraib was only the most famous, infamous case that came out. Torture in U.S. prisons, which people are in 6 by 1 foot windowless cells called the SHU program. Tens of thousands of people are faced into that. There's many cases of cattle prods used against prisoners, fatal beatings, burnings by toxic chemicals, stun guns, inmates stripped naked and forced to crawl on the ground, rapes, years in sensory deprivation cells, 24 hours a day. All this was actually exposed on, this was a BBC documentary, Torture America's Brutal Prisons, that came out about the same time that the exposures of Abu Ghraib and it also exposes that some of the guards at Abu Ghraib had been prison guards in the state of Pennsylvania and did the same thing there. Children are targeted in Afghanistan and Iraq. Thousands and thousands of children and children are targeted in the war on the African community. This is a 5-year-old arrested very brutally and put into handcuffs and taken to jail here in a school in St. Petersburg a couple of years ago. Occupying soldiers come back in body bags, and occupying police come back in body bags, because there is resistance and there are people fighting against this occupying war, this military force coming down against the people. And the Palestinian people have a right to resist. People in Afghanistan have a right to resist. And African people inside the U.S. have a right to resist. And we stand on the side of the right of African people to live without this constant military force on their backs, oppressing them in every possible way to uphold the status quo of this parasitic system built on the backs of African people. And from the Uhuru movement and the leadership of the chairman, we understand that the problem is not racism, that the problem is colonialism inside the U.S. because it is about a political and economic domination of a whole people for the benefit of the white population. In Afghanistan, the U.S. admits openly that this is a U.S. counterinsurgency. It's the occupation of a colonial people struggling to be free. In the U.S., it is beginning to admit that it is a counterinsurgency against the African community. This is a police, some kind of newsletter, and it says, urban combat, the Petraeus way, and General Petraeus is the U.S. Army expert on counterinsurgency who wrote the counterinsurgency manual. And it said the general's 8-point strategy for crime counterinsurgency applied to U.S. streets. You know that's not happening in the white community. That's happening against African people. And that in the Black Power movement of the 1960s, where we saw African people rising up all over this country as part of the main trend for revolution and national liberation movements that were going on all over the world, and the U.S. reacted against that movement by implementing COINTELPRO, a whole program led by J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI that was responsible for the assassination of people like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Fred Hampton, the leader of the Black Panthers in Chicago, Illinois. It was responsible for imprisoning African people who are still in prison today from that period, like Sundiata Okoli, who's been in jail for the last 40 years because of standing up and struggling for the right of African people to be free. So counterinsurgency involves the U.S. government drug trade. U.S. occupied Afghanistan is now 90% of the world's opium crop under U.S. occupation or more. But the U.S. is responsible also for imposing drugs and crack cocaine on the African community. This is a picture of Gary Webb, who wrote a book and did an expose in the San Jose Mercury News about how the U.S. and the CIA and the FBI were responsible for imposing crack cocaine and bringing it in from South America onto the African communities of this country. And the war against the African community has arrested, I've seen an estimated 30 million, mostly African young men, over the past several years. But most drug users, because most of them are arrested for something to do with drug use, but most drug users and sellers are white. Yet African people are arrested and go to prison for that. 76% of African men in cities will be arrested and jailed before the age of 36. 60% of all children in prison are African. And to say yes, the U.S. has tens of thousands of children in prison, probably one of the few countries in the entire world that keeps children in prison. U.S. more child prisoners than any place else in the entire world. More African people are tied to the prison system today than were enslaved in 1850. Obama's foreign war budget, $700 billion. The U.S. has spent over $1 trillion over the past two decades on the war against the African community. Wars make billions of dollars, and the war on drugs, in particular, is incredibly lucrative. It's a form of economic stimulus for the general white population and creates jobs. Millions of U.S. citizens are tied, and increasingly more so, are employed in counterinsurgency. There's at least 2.3 million U.S. military personnel around the world and inside this country. There's at least 1.2 million federal, state, and local law enforcement employees inside the U.S., plus countless thousands of prison jobs and spin-off administrative, construction, lawyers, DAs, prison vendors, outfitters. It's big business. The U.S. imposed illegal drugs worth $1 trillion a year on the African community, at least $1 trillion a year estimated by the United Nations to be gained, to be profited from the illegal drug trade worldwide, and a tremendous percentage of that is inside the U.S. And that money is not inside the African community. It's laundered through Wall Street and every kind of brokerage firm and bank and that kind of thing, you know, for the benefit of the bankers and white people throughout this country. Prisons are a multi-billion dollar a year industry. Prisons are the third largest employer in rural white America. Afghanistan, we've heard about the war profiteering of Halliburton, Blackwater, which is now Z, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, Bechtel, GE, there have been exposés on that, but the U.S. prison industry profiteering is enormous. Everybody, McDonald's, Citibank, AT&T, Nike, UPS, everything is tied to prison slave labor. Blood prisons. We say, you hear about blood diamonds, we talk about blood prisons. It's a gold rush at the expense of African people. Prison payphones make $15,000 a day. 93% of paints and paintbrushes are made by enslaved Africans in prisons, 92% of stove assembly, et cetera, et cetera. Corporations and government make billions of dollars on enslaved African labor. Did you see all those pictures of people cleaning up the Gulf of Mexico? They were prisoners. They were prisoners. Those weren't volunteers. Those were Africans forced to do the dirtiest, most toxic jobs for nothing, for British Petroleum's benefit. Private prisons trade on Wall Street. CCA, which is one of the major prison industries, it sells at least $21 a share and projects a 22% increase over the next 5 years with the economic situation going the way it is. The state of California has spent $35,000 per prisoner, and as an investment over the years, it has a $10 billion prison budget. And this is a way of basically creating jobs for white people. It's an economic stimulus before Obama's stimulus came in. It's been an economic stimulus for the last 30 years that's kept the white economy afloat. The war against the African people began with the enslavement of African people and the assault on Africa. Capitalism was born from the enslavement of African people. African enslavement is the foundation of U.S. wealth and power. And this is, Europe was poor, it was oppressed, it was disease-ridden, it had the plague, it had feudalism, it had a few people, lords and ladies, who controlled everybody else, who was tied to the land. And Europe became wealthy and powerful by launching out its ships into Africa, stealing the whole continent of African people and all of its gold and all of its resources, and coming to the Americas, committing genocide against the indigenous people and stealing the resources and the land, and colonizing Asia and the Arab world and the majority of the planet. So we say that all white people sit on a pedestal of enslavement and genocide. The ongoing white colonial terror that we have carried out, the white population has carried out against African people in the U.S., brutal reign of torture and terror against African people that has gone on for hundreds of years, and the lynchings, which weren't some furtive fly-by-night kind of event, but an open public event that children came to, there was dancing, that women came to, and it was the basis even for the county fair in the South. White America is 5% of the world's population, but it consumes 50% of the entire world's resources. This is why the African People's Socialist Party exists. It is working for liberation and unification of Africa and African people everywhere. It's based on the understanding that African people everywhere, whether they're in the U.S., whether they're in Brazil or Jamaica or Guyana or Nicaragua or in Britain or Germany or wherever else they are one people, and Africa is their homeland. It is completely a crime that De Beers and Shell Oil and all other kinds of corporations are there today plundering the vast and very lucrative riches of Africa while African people are living on less than a dollar a day inside the continent of Africa. Under the leadership of the African working class worldwide, the Uhuru Movement is organizing the African Socialist International, an organization of African people and organizations all over the world working to liberate Africa for the benefit of African people, to feed African people, to control the resources, to have Africa's resources for African people. All of Africa's resources need to go back to African people. This is reparations. This is righting the historic wrong. White people can stand in solidarity. We don't have to keep our blinders on and pretend that we don't understand what it takes to fuel our lifestyle, based on 50% of the world's resources being stolen from the mouths of everybody else on the planet. Am I coming home? Am I coming home?